I'm Nick Harcourt, and I'm here with Austin and Patton from The Nude Party.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently I say it in a bit of a weird way, but it's great to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you, Nick.
You too, Nick.
Thanks for coming and playing for us. Want to talk about the new album, and I know that you made the new album in a new space, which I want to talk about, but maybe we could sort of dial it back a little bit to the album before that, Midnight Manor, which I believe you recorded just before lockdown, right? You'd gotten the songs pretty much recorded before COVID?
Yeah, we did. We had written it like through like 2018 and 2019. We toured the first album so much that by the time we came to do the second one, we just had like all this built up material and we did it. And then when we went to put it out, it was like, I'm so tired of hearing about the pandemic, and I am too, but it put it out in like the worst time ever. It was like in the middle of like a lot of like Black Lives Matter protests and like the pandemic and like just like Me Too stuff and just like not the, and it felt weird trying to like raise your hand at that time and be like, listen to my album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just like there was so much bigger stuff.
There was
going
no
on.
Celebratory space to take. It didn't seem like
yeah. So we just kind of like
seem like a congratulations.
Put it out and we're like, okay, there's that.
And you couldn't tour, obviously. I mean, you couldn't go out.
Yeah,
and
no promo, no tour, no radio.
Support it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like as you're touring again that now you're actually getting to play that record, and then all of a sudden now you've got another record to play?
Yeah, there's definitely like a little bit of like a backlog, but yeah, I think that was a weird time, a difficult time. But now coming out of this and like having Ride On and like starting to tour this record, even though it's not quite out yet, it's like,
right,
it feels super duper good.
March 10th, we're recording this a couple of weeks before release date. So anticipation for getting out there and playing the new songs?
Yeah, we've been doing some of them at some of the other shows, just kind of like workshopping, like building a new set, and it feels great, yeah.
Do you guys write on the road as well? Do you try new stuff out before you record it?
We don't like, I mean, there's so much to do in touring, and there's so little time to really like take to yourself or do much creative. I think that like a lot of like little ideas come out. Like I'll do like voice memos of like a melody or a sound check, maybe a little thing on my guitar or something, or like little lyrics or like some funny thing I saw that like little bits get gathered, but they don't really get like congealed until back off the road.
If you go back to Midnight Manor, you guys made that up in the Catskills, right? And then that sort of led to you getting a place up there and moving up there. Tell us a little bit about
we went to school in Boone, North Carolina.
Right.
And when we finished school, we knew that we wanted to go somewhere else because it was just like a small college town, which like for most people has like a 5-year shelf life.
Sure.
And we had just come upon 5 years.
Right.
So we were like looking at different places to live. We were considering like all just like cramming into some little apartment in Brownsville, Brooklyn, or like Louisville, Kentucky.
Kentucky was mentioned. And
sure.
It's kind of a lot of non-direction. And Oakley Munson, who had produced some EPs for us out of Asheville, North Carolina, he had just acquired a home in the Catskills and invited us to come and live there.
Right.
So we had actually been in the Catskills for some years by the time we were doing Midnight Manor there. And we recorded our debut album in the Catskills as well.
Right. And then for the new album, you actually got yourself a barn and
yeah, during that whole pandemic period when the big daddies up top were cutting checks for everybody, we just like pretty much put it into like building a studio in the barn, the property where we lived.
Smart.
And then we made a record there.
Right.
So now this is the first record that we've like produced ourselves in our own home studio.
So tell us about setting up a barn and, you know, how you go about that, setting up at the studio. I mean, obviously, you know, technology, you can record anywhere
like
these
drywall
days.
Drywall and, like, caulking. A lot of getting down there together and just caulking with each other.
Right.
Just caulking around.
Right.
And just ripping wet, sopping insulation out of walls.
Yeah.
There was some point where a snake was exposed from a ceiling and,
a snake in the
and
ceiling.
Dropped.
Yikes.
So there was a lot of that. We had to like basically rebuild an entire wall of the barn to accommodate for that, and cut out spaces for windows, and it was a
carpentry, general carpentry.
Yeah. So you're like everybody else in the Catskills now.
We're just regular folks.
You're musicians / builders, construction guys.
Yeah, I mean, I hardly
might be
landscaping.
I'm willing to say that's liberal, but
yeah.
No. Yeah. I would not call myself a carpenter.
If you drop me in the woods with, you know, without tools, I'm gonna die there.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not making it out.
Fair enough. Tell us about the songs on Ride Zone. When were they written? Were they written during COVID, or were they kicking around?
I think a lot of them do come from like probably like 2019, 2020. Some of them like are old ones that like sometimes you have an idea or like at least like a chord pattern that you kick around with different lyrics and melodies and stuff and sort of write and rewrite over the course of like years before you finally like do it. So, you know, some of them are a long time coming, but a good amount of the record is like came right out of like 2020.
So how do you feel this album compares with the previous one from the point of view of musically and lyrically? I mean, you know, we all evolve.
I feel like it's definitely the best one,
right?
To my mind, which I feel like I also say that every time.
Well, hopefully you get better every time,
yeah,
right?
It is how I feel.
I think, like, sonically it is true to form. You know, we're not making a huge departure from what we've made before, but are adding sophistications and getting better at what we have historically done.
Sophisticated. It's a very sophisticated rock and roll record.
Yeah. Very ritzy.
Yeah.
And you talked about, obviously, doing it yourselves. I mean, this is the first time you've done everything yourselves.
Well, I should temper that. I have a friend that I've known for a while that's like, he just like buys tons of like crazy vintage gear and resells it, and he lives like down like the Florida Everglades on a trailer next to a farm where his wife's family owns. Too much detail. But he basically just has all this crazy, like he's got 3 tape Mellotrons. He has a set of tapes for his Mellotron that has the Beatles' voices on it, like recorded to tape. And he's got all this crazy
Chick Corea's
like
Mellotron
Chick-Corea.
And stuff.
So
ridiculous
like,
gear.
He's an old friend of mine. Well, he's actually younger than us. But he brought all of his gear up to our studio, and so sonically we got to mess around with so much more stuff, like crazy like Vox repeater guitars and like 50s Gibson amps and like the Mellotrons and like synthesizers and tapes, like all this cool stuff. And he engineered it, which like the producing was just kind of came down to like who the ringleader at any time was probably going to be, whoever like mostly wrote the song. But Matt Horner, who brought all the gear up and engineered it, had like a big part of the whole sonic, you know, color scheme of the record.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or if you could describe a sound that you were going for to him, he could help you accommodate that. He could bring you closer to.
And he's really
the
nice.
Thing.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, we like this guy a lot.
But that's a great engineer, isn't it? An engineer who can listen to what you're.
It's nice to have a creative engineer.
Right.
Yeah.
What did you learn as producers from this?
I mean, that you just don't have to like set up one way and then run through a record like that.
There's no
rules. You know what I mean? It's not just like, all right, we got the drum sounds, and then just like, no, run through the whole record. You don't have to do it that way.
Right.
You can like, and you don't have to take forever either. You can just flip the kick drum over and throw a pillow on it and hit it with a mallet and be like, that's a cool sound. Let's use that sound for the bottom end. And then just like there was one song, the song Tree of Love on there that we did, was completely unrehearsed, and we weren't even going to do it on the record. It was just we were coming back from a lunch break, and I was just like playing it on acoustic, and Matt's like just started setting some other stuff up, and then like I think you were playing like an upturned floor tom or something.
Yeah, Connor was playing a floor tom, and there's like a railroad spike in it,
like a bunch of animal noises. But
yeah,
I think you don't have to be super crazy diligent. You don't have to do every song the same way. You can just like roll with the sounds that sound cool.
Where do you think you got those rules from that you've now broken?
Because we used to just have to like go into studio and like we'd have so little money, it'd be like, all right, you got like 3 days to do this, and like half of it's set up.
What can we get in 8 hours?
So it's just like, okay, we'll rehearse the songs, we'll prepare them all as much as we can,
right.
And then we'll go and we'll just try to bang them out exactly the way that we know them. Which is like, it's a good method too, you know, for getting that, particularly if like you've toured a song and you've like played it enough times, you've found all like the parts that you like to do.
Right.
But with this, we hadn't toured any of these songs. They were all new. We were learning them like as we were doing them and like changing and rearranging. So this method of just kind of like playing with the blocks was way better, I thought.
You'll get a kick out of this as a drummer. I interviewed Jeff Emmerich, I think is his last name, who was the Beatles engineer years ago. And he was telling me about when they first started making records and they were in EMI studios. I don't know if it was Abbey Road or what, but it was, you know, in the studios that was owned by, you know, the man. And they had rules. It's like you record drums this way. That's the way you do it. And he said one day he, you know, took the front off the drums and everybody had a heart attack because
he literally threw the rule book out the window.
Yeah, you don't do drums like that. And, you know, here we are, you know, 50 years later or whatever, and people are still finding new ways to create.
Yeah.
So the songs you were talking about, different people bring different songs to the plate. How do you? Is that a democracy? How do you guys decide what you're going to record?
Well, I mean, everybody can bring songs up, and we just kind of like take the pool that we get. Like I write a lot of them, and other people, like Sean writes a good bit, and Zach does too, and like Connor's had a few as well. So like out of this like big pool of like song ideas, some like are fleshed out with like chords and lyrics and stuff, and some are like maybe just a riff or something. So we just kind of like dig through that pool and give ourselves enough time that no one feels like their ideas are getting left out, you know? And just kind of like sift through the whole thing and just kind of take the best that comes out of it. And it doesn't mean that if it got left, it's gone, you know? You can come back to it too.
Sure. And do things come back in different cycles as well? Did you have bits and pieces left over from the previous record?
Yeah, I think we did.
I think, yeah, like certain...
There's a couple songs.
Not like specificity things, but like ideas or elements of older stuff comes back.
Right.
You know, like we're still playing songs from like our first EPs and like first albums. And so I think in terms of when you come to a new thing, you kind of carry the experience of the old stuff with you still.
Right.
And so some of those riffs do show up or just ideas we didn't get to flesh out then.
So how long did you spend making the record with the luxury of
I think
your own
Matt
space?
Came up and we spent maybe like 10 days at first, but then we all got COVID. So he couldn't go home for Christmas. And then we all had COVID, so we just had Christmas together.
Right.
So I think from like, I think the latter half of December. Yeah, it was funny. We had like, it was like 10 days of recording and then some people got COVID so they couldn't come. But then like we all just had it. So we just went back to recording. And I think maybe kept some of those vocal takes that are like, oh, kind of sound like.
sound you got horrible. A little extra sort
Yeah, I was just like way tired. And like,
right.
But yeah, we did like the latter half of December. And then I think we got back together in like late January or February or something and did a second session. So I'd say in total, probably like 4 weeks.
Right. And then now it's ready. You're about to put it out into the world.
I hope it's ready. Yeah. Cause yeah. Yeah.
It's ready.
Yeah. It's coming out on March 10th. Yeah. So
yeah. The records are getting made now. So.
Right.
It
should be ready.
Right. It's done.
So now you get the opportunity to go out and play both of your last two records. Like you must be excited to be getting ready to tour again.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the cool thing too is like, it's like as you, now we've got like three records worth of material, plus like, you know, we could do like covers and like a few older things too, where I don't feel like we have to like tour a record so specifically. What we have is just like this big like batch of like vibes and like sounds, and there's like some psyche stuff from this record, some psyche stuff from here, like some more countrified stuff from here and from there. So we can really like, what's exciting to me is sort of like building like a dynamic set that kind of like plays with like all the dynamics and different sounds from all the records and like puts them next to each other so you can get like a good like flow.
Like a flow,
to like
yeah.
a headlining set, you know.
Do you put a set together like that? Like it's got a beginning and a middle and an end, like a song?
Yeah, I mean, cause some of the best shows I've ever seen are like that. I saw like the Stones in Santa Clara and it was like, just like, you know what I mean? They had a portion of the show where like much of the band left and just like Keith and Mick and Charlie and
Daryl.
No, not Daryl. Ronnie?
What is it? Ronnie Wood.
Yeah, Ronnie Wood. Yeah. Come up and do like this acoustic portion of the set where it's like, it goes from like real loud and like big heavy, like saxophone solos and stuff down to this like real stripped down, like pedal steel and harmonica stuff. And then like back to big and like, I'm like, we played with Jack White, and there's a portion of his set where he brings it all the way down, just acoustic guitar, and does I Can Tell That We're Gonna Be Friends. And I like that, watching like some really great performers like that, like, and seeing like their show and kind of like seeing the scaffolding of it, I'm like, oh, that's like, yeah, I like
inspirational,
that.
Inspirational, really.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
What makes far more of like a memory for an audience member is that this is more of like a full-fledged performance.
Right.
It's not just like a reiteration of songs that you could hear on a record. Things are different, and there's an experience of going to the show, that which should be the reason why you go to the show, is that something is provided for you that's different.
Absolutely.
Than just hearing it.
I mean, it's about the experience, isn't it, at the end of the day? You can hear the songs on, I was going to say on a record, but you know, on a phone probably more than likely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you actually get the experience of seeing the band putting together.
Yeah, and maybe mess it up.
Yeah. Yeah, good fuck up here and there. Never heard anybody.
People love that.
Yeah.
You can say
I played
that
a song
here?
In the wrong key last time.
Yeah, because I think they'll probably edit it or something. I don't know. But yeah, this will live on the web as well. So
shit, cool.
I don't think they'll, say whatever you want. I don't think they'll censor us. Yeah. It's great meeting you guys. Thanks for coming.
Great to meet you. Thanks
for
coming.
Thank you.
Playing for us. Yeah, real pleasure. It's the Nude Party.
Juanita is a grocery store greeter, glad to meet and re-meet ya, at nearly 9 to 5 and working 9 to 5. They say, Juanita, why you come here still? You got enough dough to get you over the hill. You can kick back, baby, and try to relax. When you're old and your eyes are dim, you're gonna shut them and never open them again. So just ride, ride on, ride on, like you think it's all right. Ride on, ride on. And what I found at the edge of that cliff, I'd rather die than be another what if. All right. Band and make my living with my mouth to my hand. Sometimes they put us on the radio, and people say, why you wanna play rock and roll? You'll get a dollar to pay a $2 toll. I just ride, ride on. Walking down a summerside country lane, straight out of fields of wheat and grain, and through the tail of my uptown train came your white lace, cherry red knee-high boots. Now I recall it was a blue-gray winter's day, when the skies opened up to rain, dragging a silver chain. Came your white lace, cherry red knee-high boots. They were very red, cherry red knee-high boots. And no square-heeled, steel-toed, skinhead cop is gonna kick me down once I make the top, baby. All the other girls are dying to know, where in the world did you get those? They're not the corner store or pornographic plastic kind, they're the kind with the neon shine and a heel like a roll of dimes. Was your white lace, cherry red knee-high boots? They were very red, cherry red knee-high boots. Dying to know, all the other girls are dying to know, where in the world did you get those? Cherry red knee-high boots. It was really something. They were very red, cherry red knee-high boots. far be it from me to be someone who brings you down. Hard times, California, it must be hard times all around. From the gold San Francisco Bay to the gray Long Island Sound, it looks like hard, hard times all around. Hard times in New Orleans, hard times in Houston. For everybody packing up their dreams to beat a flood to higher ground. Hard times in the USA, and it's hard times in Mexico. Politicos play the changing games. If you can stay and you must go, it looks like hard, hard.
SoCal Sound Sessions are produced by 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Nick Harcourt. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.